Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, October 12th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North.
Oh my God, you totally outrank me, because I'm only your host. That savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. I have an outstanding show in store for you today. After a spate of wonderful chats with visual artists over the past several weeks for this Erotic Mind podcast series, today we return to home base, the world of words. I have the pleasure of introducing you to an enormously talented author from Down Under, Jeffrey Knight. He's a rising star in the firmament of the erotic novel, don't you know? And besides his big, fat, uncut writing talent, he's also a laugh riot. I love it when I can barely make it through an interview because my guest and I are laughing so much.
Just a drink. A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Hey, do I look like the hired help? Listen, you should also know that Jeffrey's appearance here at DrDickSexAdvice.com coincides with his triumphant book tour in San Francisco as part of Litquake 10, mind you. All of you in my audience who live in the San Francisco Bay Area ought to hightail it to one of the three appearances he's making over the next week. Tonight, October 12th, he'll be at Books, Inc. in the Castro. Thursday, October 15th, he'll be at the Supper Club in South of Market. And finally, on Friday, October 16th, he'll read and sign copies of his book at A Different Light bookstore in the Castro.
Jerry, don't let us for the moon. We have the stars.
That is so true. And as a special treat for all of you out there who love a hot Aussie accent as much as I do, Jeffrey will share a mouth-watering selection of the fruit of his erotic mind. You don't want to miss this, people. For more of Jeffrey, be sure to visit him on his blog, jeffreyknight.blogspot.com, or on his Facebook page, facebook.com/jeffreyknight.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Well, I don't know where you can get more bubblegum, but today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the Video On Demand tab. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Jeffrey, and thank you for joining us. It's so great to have you join us here for the Erotic Mind podcast. And a great big shout-out to our mutual friend, Brenda Knight from Cleus Press, who hooked us up. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here, and thank you, Richard, and thank you, Brenda. And Brenda's actually no relation to me, despite we have the same surname.
Oh, sure. She's your mommy. Right.
Got me the book published.
Your mommy published your book. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Anyhow, okay, so not to be overly silly quite yet. So I've been visiting your Facebook page, which is cleverly named facebook.com/Jeffrey Knight. And what struck me first was your author's statement. You write, "Hey guys, my name is Jeff. I'm a Sydney-based author ready to take gay literature on a roller coaster ride of high-speed action. For too long now, I've been asking, where's our gay James Bond? Why can't Indiana Jones be tough, proud, and out? And who is Matthew McConaughey's Dirk Pitt taking his shirt off for? Really? So how did you come to take this approach to gay literature?
For forever, really. I am a big action fan, and I studied film at university, and I've always been a big fan of the movies and action novels, and just forever it's like I love the sequences that people come up with and the heroes and the villains and all of that kind of stuff. But there was never any kind of connection for me, being a gay man, that any kind of romance that would gel. You know, there's always the pretty blonde neurophysicists that the hero falls in love with. And you know, I kind of always wanted the hero to fall in love with another hero. And so there was that chemistry was always lacking on a fundamental level. There was that one box that was never ticked for me, and I thought, you know what, I think this box needs to be ticked.
Right. I agree. You know, as long as I can remember, you know, the movies and television and stuff like that, I would fall in love on a regular basis and wonder why the person I'm in love with seemed to be distracted by a female person, which I just never could understand. Like, why bother?
It just seems so obvious that, you know, gay men love heroes, and I just...
Right, and let's be honest. I mean, the audience, I mean, the intended audience must... there's homoeroticism, you know, in how the images are drawn or how the characters are presented. I mean, Matthew McConaughey is constantly taking off his shirt. I mean, why bother even putting a shirt on him? Basically.
Yeah, why would you? It's just not necessary.
It's so true. You also write, I've been a fan of Flash Gordon and Aquaman and 007, and why wouldn't I be? I'm a gay, and they're hot, heroic, and have bulging biceps. Personally, I've had enough of rough, tough, sexy, handsome action heroes who are all straight. It's time we had a few rough, tough, sexy, handsome action heroes of our own, which is why I wrote Fathoms 5, The Cross of Sins. So tell us about that.
Yeah, The Cross of Sins, and just to backtrack a little, Richard, you talk about homoerotic. I mean, Flash Gordon,
really?
Sam Jones, back in the 1980 film, was just... he was a gay man, and I was, you know, quite young then, but my God, I think he turned me gay on the spot.
It was Flash Gordon's fault. I just knew it. But, I remember Flash Gordon from the 50s when it was a television series here in the United States, and boy, my parents would be trying to rush us out of the house at the same time to go to church on Sunday, and Flash Gordon was on, and I just, Jesus, Flash Gordon, I could never make up my mind which one I wanted.
Oh, dear, but you have now.
Jesus, Flash Gordon, I don't know.
Anyway, so speaking of Jesus, The Cross of Sins, the first Fathoms 5 book, it's about my heroes, my Fathoms 5, which we'll talk about a little bit.
Right.
And they go in search of a statue of Christ that a fanatical sect of the church want to destroy because Christ is naked on it, which,
it's
quite scandalous and sacrilegious. Mm-hmm. But the Fathoms 5 team consider it to be an expression of creativity and freedom, and it can't be destroyed. Mm-hmm. So that's what the first book is about, and that's why I wrote the first book, which was described as Gay Raiders of the Lost Da Vinci Code.
Well, that kind of covers all the bases.
It does.
Oh, dear. Then you write, meet Luca di Roma, an Italian model and expert in art both ancient and modern. Dr. Eden Santiago, Brazilian biologist, physician, and genetic engineer. Shane Houston, a Texas cowboy and an expert in cartography. Will Hunter, a San Diego College student and football star majoring in ancient history. And Jake Stone, an adventurer for hire from New York, and the newest member of Professor Fathom's team of hot, gay adventure seekers. Oh, that piques my interest right off the bat, because you have all the bases covered, as it were.
Coming up with the character, it actually took quite a while to come up with the right dynamic of characters.
Right.
It took me quite a few years.
Yeah.
I initially started with just one character, and it was going to get boring with one character, you know, solving all these mysteries and following these maps and having sex all the
right.
time. And so I needed more skills in my characters. I needed more variety. And,
instead
and
of just big penises.
they needed to be talented as well.
You're a hell of a guy. I'm so glad we're talking because, go figure. So I have to ask you, how did you come up with the names? Will and Jake and...
I think I looked on the back of some porno DVDs.
Because the funny thing is that I used to shoot a lot of porn with my production company, Daddy O Productions, and for the first couple of movies, when I was employing rank amateurs, people who have never worked before, I got to name them all. You know, I got to, you know, give them, you know, their porn names. And I used to love that. I absolutely love that. In fact, one of my favorites was, and I would name them after my friends, basically, so that they, you know, could look at the box covers and go, oh, that guy's named after me.
What an honor.
I know. I loved it. And so, anyhow, it was a fun thing naming folks because, you know, I got to do, you know, strong names like Stone and things like that.
And who was your favorite?
Oh God, let's see, who was my favorite? Oh, there were so many of them that I really liked. Nick Stone was, you know, the guy who one of the first people that I named, and I loved the name Nick, and
yeah.
Stone was the last name of one of my dear friends in San Francisco, and so I just put the two names together and stuff, and so I guess he was one of my all-time favorite ones. So
there I think I might put Nick in a book soon.
Ah, and then there was Jude Marshall. And sometimes I let the performers, you know, choose parts of their names, but, you know, I would kind of direct them. And Jude Marshall was a wonderful one. And Julian Moreno was another one, which I was very proud of. But anyhow, back to you, which is much more interesting than me. Further, you write, together, they are Fathom Five, traveling the world, solving ancient mysteries, uncovering priceless treasures, and getting into hot, sticky, and sexy situations, while thwarting danger at every turn. From Venice to Vienna, from Tuscany to Turkey, from the South Pacific to the seas off Sicily, join the heroic adventures, hunky sex, and hot, high-octane action of Fathom 5. That is so amazing. I mean, do you foresee this being serialized in a movie?
I've actually been asked that question quite a lot, because I'm actually quite a visual writer as well. Because my history is film, I very much write like you're watching a movie.
Right.
And I think... I would absolutely love to see it as a film, but I don't know. It would have quite a big budget, and there's a lot going on. There's volcanoes and stuff. And I don't think Hollywood is ready to commit money into a gay action movie or series of movies at the moment. I think that's the beauty of writing novels, and this is why I've switched from writing screenplays to writing novels.
Uh-huh.
Is I've got all the power. I'm not reliant on producers and money and you know, funders and directors and actors. And I mean, making film is such a collaborative process, whereas writing a novel is such a personal thing that, you know, at the end of the day, and one of the things I said to myself when I started writing this novel was, I'm going to write a novel that I want to read. And if nobody publishes it, if nobody ever reads it but me, I don't mind, because I wanted to do it for me. I was going to be my number one fan. And I think that when you write a novel, you retain a lot of integrity, and you can actually produce something that, hey, this is what I've created. Right. Whereas, you know, you write a screenplay, I've written so many screenplays in my life, and, you know, they very rarely do they get up and made. In fact, I've never had a film made.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, writing a novel, you have a lot of control.
Right. And, you know, I think you have a point there, and this is something that's pretty universal in all the people that I've been talking to in this series, is that they write to please themselves, and or they create their art to please themselves, and if there's others who, you know, enjoy it, that's gravy. And I think that, you know, that comes from a deep down inside an integrity that, you know, makes for magical art. As far as I'm concerned, I used to do the same thing with Daddy O. I would shoot movies that I liked because I didn't see that kind of stuff in the marketplace, in the porn marketplace, and it resonated with some and not with others. And because it was not your traditional kind of porn, where you know you had a the boom chicka boom kind of background music, and you know there had to be a cum shot twice in 20 minutes, or I broke all those rules, and some people liked it and some people didn't, but you know, at least I did, and you know, that was what was important.
It's one of those things that, you know, it's all about, really, I hate to sound like a cliche, but it is about following your heart.
Yeah.
And doing what's true to yourself. I wrote a number of straight thrillers before I wrote the first Fathoms 5 book. Mm-hmm. And again, rejection letters just piled up. I was just a very
right,
small.
Right, you know, it's what they always say.
Yeah, I was a very small fish in an ocean of people wanting to do that kind of genre.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just all James Patterson and Jeffrey Deaver and people like that, and you just can't get in. You can't get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And that's when I decided to write Fathoms 5. I thought, you know what, I want to write something. I love all the action and all the thrills that I write, and I'm going to throw in stacks of gay sex and do it for me.
You know, I said at the very beginning of this that the first thing that struck me was your author statement. I lied, of course, because the first thing that struck me was the hunky man on the cover of your book, The Riddle of the Sands. So who does your book art? Is that a collaborative effort with your publisher, or?
It was a really great process. Yeah, Cleese is my publisher, and Frederick, she took care of all the cover concepts with Scott, the designer.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through this process for, they were both wonderful. They kept me involved the whole way through. They asked my advice. They asked me what I liked and what I didn't like.
Abs,
and
lots of abs. Give me lots of abs.
I want flesh. But it grew. It was something completely different to start with, because we were concentrating on you know, do we get five people in there because there's five heroes, or you know, do we concentrate on the thriller or the retro aspect of it, because it does have an old fashioned feel despite the fact that it's set in modern times. And we went right down to the deadline, where I think we got in within about 5 minutes. And Frederick found this wonderful photographer, David Vance, like the day before we had to get it in. And she just sent me an email saying, I've got it, I found the image, this is what we're going for. And Scott did a wonderful job of working it up. And I love it. I think it's the hottest cover I've ever seen.
And
it is. I'm really proud. Yeah, I'm really proud of it.
It's really great. It's really great. So listen, I want to make sure that you know that you are welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better.
Thank you.
Okay, good. So how many publications and hard copy and web-based do you have out there? Do you know?
It's pretty much the two, Two Fathoms 5 at this stage. It's The Cross of Sins, which is the first one, and then The Riddle of the Sands, which is the new one.
Uh-huh.
Which is doing quite well. It was released in the States, I think, last week or the week before, and it hits the rest of the world later this month in November. It's, you know, the first book was Italian set pretty much, and this one's all over the place. It's Siberia, it's Paris, it's Egypt, it's the Amazon. It's the fun just begins from word one.
It's and a note to Brenda, at Cleus. If I don't get my copy of this, I'm going to hold my breath and eat dirt. So there. She's actually so wonderful. She sends me copies of all the books, and I'm just loving it. I intend to have this big book giveaway on Dr. Dick's Sex Advice one of these days really soon, so y'all
right.
Watch out for that too. So would you care to share a juicy tidbit from your writing now?
Yeah, let's do one, shall
Rip
we?
One. Absolutely.
Okay, so the first one I've picked is it's chapter 3 of The Riddle of the Sands. Basically, The Riddle of the Sands is about the Fathoms Five guys have to find a legendary pyramid that disappeared long, long ago. And, you know, how does a pyramid disappear? is the riddle, really. So the two, I've actually picked two tidbits today, and they're both with Will Hunter, who is the young college student. And the beauty of Will as a character is because he's majoring in ancient history, I use him as a device to, you know, he's 19, he's young, so he's up for some fun. But also, he's very good at, he's a good tool to gather information,
right,
to get across. And storyline's very important to me.
Which we're going to get to in a minute, I'm happy to report, as part of the questioning.
Well, I should just start reading then.
Good.
And so he's in his professor. He's got this hot archaeology professor, Professor Nathan Jones, who's got a special bond with. Anyway, so I'll go for it.
I love
it. We're at college. Okay. Will stood facing the blackboard, chalk in hand, in Professor Nathan Jones's small college office. He was completely naked and already hard, and he felt an enormous measure of lubricant land at the top of his ass crack. The cool gel snaked slowly between his cheeks, a sensation that turned his nipples into small hard buds in anticipation, before being stopped halfway down his ass, then smeared generously by Nathan's thumb and middle finger. Will had been drawing on the board. "According to Professor Chamberlain," he said slowly, trying to concentrate, his voice quivering a little, "the internal design of the pyramid consists of a main chamber with three passageways branching out from it. Only one of them leads to..." He suddenly caught his breath as Nathan's middle finger pushed its way firmly inside his hot, ready ass. Will pushed hard against the board and the chalk snapped in two. He exhaled slowly, eyes closed for a moment, and finished his sentence in a whisper. "Only one leads to... the ascension shaft."
Go on, please.
Nathan's finger slid in and out of Will's ass, relaxing him, opening him up. "According to Chamberlain's theory," breathed Nathan, "there should be a hieroglyph above the entrance to the tunnel that leads to the shaft. What is it?" Soft groans began to creep into Will's voice as he drew on the board. "A snake, a horizontal semicircle, a horizontal rectangle, a circle on top of a cross." Will sighed as Nathan pulled his finger from his ass. "Living forever." He heard the snap of a condom being stretched, then rolled over Nathan's cock. "What's the purpose of the ascension shaft?" Will felt the swollen head of Nathan's cock nudge gently against his entry. He gripped the sides of the blackboard in both hands to brace himself, then straightened his back and pushed his ass out, hungry for Nathan's cock. "It's a passageway. A passageway for the souls of the entombed. A path to the..." Will gasped. Nathan's cock, huge and hard, plunged itself inside Will's desperate burning ass. The blackboard rocked on its easel with the weight of both Nathan and Will pushing against it. "Heavens," the young student finished. Nathan pulled his cock out halfway, then pushed inside Will even harder, quickly building up a rhythm. His left hand settled on Will's hip and held on tight. His right hand, still wet with lube, reached around Will's tight, muscled stomach and edged its way down till he found the young man's stiff, pulsating cock. He clenched it in his slippery fist and began stroking it hard. Will gritted his teeth as short, sharp grunts of pleasure escaped him. Nathan picked up speed and began to thrust harder, faster. Will fell forward, but caught himself by placing his hands against the board in front of him, smearing the chalk diagram of the pyramid's chambers. Nathan quickened the pace of his stroke on Will's cock, his hand pounding it now, sliding swiftly from the head down the shaft, down the length of his shaft, slapping against Will's balls, then shooting back up again. Will looked down and watched. Faster, he breathed. Nathan's hand was moving so quickly it became a blur. The head of Will's cock swelled even larger, ready to explode, bursting with a bright purple plum colour. A small spurt of pre-cum pumped out of it. He clenched his teeth, holding himself back, resisting the urge to come with all his strength. Inside him he could feel Nathan's hammering cock grow more and more engorged. Nathan panted harder and harder, his breath hot on the back of Will's neck. He tightened his grip on Will's hip and pressed himself flat against Will's back now, moving ever closer to him, pushing even deeper inside him. Will felt the sparse hair of Nathan's chest and stomach brush against his back. Their sweat mingled. Nathan's hips clapped frantically against Will's buttocks. He began to groan as if in pain. "I can't hold." Suddenly Nathan let out a loud, ache-filled "fuck." Will felt the scorching hot burst filling the condom inside him as the head of the rubber ballooned with not one, not two, but three sizzling surges. A split second later, Will unclenched his jaw, opened his mouth wide, and let a great coil of cum spring from his loins. It shot up from his balls, up his shaft, and spattered against the blackboard. Will groaned. Nathan gave the young man's cock one last hard stroke and squeezed it tight at the base, forcing out a second wave of cum that shot even higher than the first. White spools landed on Will's smeared depiction of the pyramid's tunnel system before sliding slowly down the board in glistening trails. For a long moment, the two men stayed where they were, locked together, heaving and panting. Then, exquisitely, slowly, Nathan pulled himself out of Will's passage. The young student let out another small gasp as Nathan slid from his ass, then turned in time for Nathan to plant a long, hard kiss on his lips. "This isn't in the curriculum, you know." Will smiled. "You'd be my favourite subject if it was." Nathan pointed to the blackboard, panting. "I'm talking about the pyramid, the lost pyramid of Imhotep." "Why the sudden curiosity?" "It's a myth, you know. There's no proof it actually exists, or ever did."
Dum da dum dum dum. I love it.
Reading a scene like that gets me a bit quivery.
Oh, and rightfully so. And you do it so well, I might add. Which is
thank you.
It's an amazing kind of thing. I can tell that you enjoy your own work, which is a really good thing. It seems to me. One thing I wanted to ask you about, I noticed that you purposely used condoms in your sex scene. Why is that?
I always do.
I think it's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thanks. It gets hard. They've always got to find a condom in a pocket somewhere. but thank you. I'd hate to think that. You know, I was promoting the wrong message,
right?
That, you know, especially with five different guides,
yes. There's
obviously, yeah. Not, my books aren't packed with sex, but there's enough sex in them that if there were scenes without safe sex, I'd feel guilty and concerned. Right.
Good. You know, interestingly enough, just about everybody else that I've interviewed in this series, from the short story writers to the erotic novelist, if they are based in, you know, the current period, everyone is using condoms, which I think is absolutely wonderful because, unfortunately, you don't see that in porn as much as I think you ought, but that's an aside. So listen, before we get to discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about you. Is Jeffrey Knight your real name or a nom de plume?
Yes, it's my real name, absolutely. Yeah.
So why are you writing under your own name?
I don't... When I first
sounds
finished,
like a porn name.
No, it's me. I was quite proud of the first book, and I'm even more proud of the second book. And yeah, I am very much a I am what you see is what you get. Yes. People can take me or leave me. And if I were to write something different, like a different genre, I would put it under. I would come up with a pen name for that, because I think that would confuse the audience.
Yes.
But because this is my first major publication, absolutely, I'm putting my hand up, saying yes, it's me.
Well, good for you. I'm really proud. So, can you give us a bit of a bio?
Yeah. I think with the creative process, you kind of it's something that starts really young. And I was my parents moved around. I was always moving from town to town as a kid, and so I didn't have a lot. And so I spent a lot of time drawing and writing, and I really grew those skills, which kind of came naturally to me. But obviously, you have to work that kind of stuff if you want to be good at it. Practice makes perfect any. So I guess because I was in a new school, I was always third and spending a lot of time on my own. So then I went to university and I decided to study film because, while I was moving around all these small towns, the other thing I used to do was go to the movies all the time and read books. So I went to university and I studied journalism and film studies, and that started me writing screenplays. And in the meantime, I went into marketing and advertising, which I quite enjoy. But I kind of, for about 10 years, in my 20s, I wrote a lot of screenplays and, got a little bit of interest, nothing great. And then I started writing novels in my 30s, and I'm just turned 40. So,
wow.
I haven't written a screenplay for a little while now. I just love the control and the fun that, just the finished product of a novel is just wonderful. I love it.
Right, it
is. Me.
Talk about gratification. My goodness, to see a manuscript finished is one thing, but to see it published is something quite different altogether.
And to see it published with that hot guy on the cover.
I so agree. So how did you get, you were talking about, having your background writing. So you wrote as a kid, basically. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't. Not erotica.
No.
I just do it.
And then the teddy bear. No, just kidding.
Mum, what do you think of this story?
Precocious.
No, I was quite good at short stories and stuff like that, and I loved English at school, and I was always the teacher's pet because I wasn't friends with anybody else, and so I've got a big debt to especially my English teachers, and it's at high school and primary school because they were very very supportive of me. I was a bit of a nerd. I didn't really have any friends, and so they really took me under their wing, and they could see that I could write, and so they used to encourage me a lot.
Right.
And I think those role models back then are really important, and it's, I think teachers are really important.
Right. Interesting. This is another universal that I've discovered in all the artists, both graphic and literary, that I've interviewed in this series. Everyone started out as a kid, writing or drawing or, painting or doing something artistic.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking it's kind of bred in the bone. And you either got it or you don't. I decidedly don't. And that's probably... Oh, I know. It's tragic.
Say that.
I can do other things. I can, I can shoot porn. I can give sex advice. So neener, neener.
It's good.
You know, actually, I have two unpublished manuscripts, but they're not erotic kind of stuff. But I digress. And
that's great, though. That's a feat. That's a real achievement.
It is. It is. It is. It is. And that's why I said, having a finished manuscript is one thing, and it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I'm as proud as punch. I could hardly be more proud if it actually was published, but I feel really good about, you know, the contribution that I made, and, you know, and that I actually did it. And so, but anyhow, our time is up for today, and I'm obviously just getting started with you, sir. And I want you to read some more. Will you be able to come back next week?
Absolutely. I'd love to. I'm having fun.
Well, we'll see about that next time.
Okay.
So, but before we go, would you give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
Yeah, I'm one of those silly people who is a little bit unorganized with that kind of stuff. But I don't actually have a website, but definitely cleispress.com. Yeah. Cleis is C-L-E-I-S, press.com. They're my publisher.
Yeah.
Or otherwise, there's the cleverly named facebook.com. /Jeffrey Knight.
Yeah.
And I've also got a blog spot, which I've only just started. So that's at jeffreyknight.blogspot.com.
And we'll make sure that we link to this in our podcast. So until we meet again next week, we will be seeing you in cyberspace, sir.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I love cyberspace.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye.
What a great show, huh? Tune in next week for part two of my interview with Jeffrey Knight and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Okay, I think I can keep that in my head. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. Remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? And listen, sex fans, I hope you are also following my other series of interviews called Sex Edgeducation. In these podcasts, I converse with prominent practitioners, educators, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles. We investigate the world of fetish sex and kink. And we discuss topics like BDSM, power play, polyamory, and swinging. This series appears on Wednesdays. My regular podcasts like this one continue on Mondays. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex, why, that's even better. Over and out.